1850 715
815. Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. An eagle-eyed listener, pardon the pun, spotted a flock of doves on a roof in Roscommon this week, but nothing unusual there, except all the doves were pink. And we tweeted a photograph, and she is baffled as to how you can have pink doves. Anthony Corbett works for Wedding Doves Ireland. I think he is Wedding Doves Ireland. Have you ever heard of a pink dove, Anthony?
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, yeah.
Thanks for inviting me onto your show. Yeah, I just got a call from one of your colleagues earlier on, and I've seen that photograph in particular. I'd imagine it was used for a gender reveal.
What?
There seems to be a bunch of pink doves just sitting on the roof of a house somewhere in the west of Ireland.
And how are they used in a gender reveal?
Gender reveals are basically used by couples who want to reveal the gender of the baby.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've seen this. And to be honest with you, it's a bit disingenuous to dye in that colour, you know.
So hang on. It gives
a bad impression for all wedding dove release specialists around the country.
So you're saying I go to the party under the COVID regulation, 250 for the rest of us, 200, none for the rest of us. Anyway, we're outdoors. And you can have a musician from 12 o'clock today. But gender reveal, I say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm pregnant, or we're pregnant, as they say, and they pull open this box and the doves fly out, and whatever colour the doves are is the gender, pink for a girl, blue for a boy, is it?
Yeah, that must have been what happened. It's a bit weird because I got a call the other day. I was actually doing a wedding in Blanchardstown releasing some doves, and I got a call from a lady from the west of Ireland inquiring, do I dye my doves? So I'd imagine that she was looking to dye some, and I told her it's under no circumstances would I be dyeing any of my doves for several reasons, and two, basically, one, because the birds of prey that we have around at the moment would target these doves.
Okay.
And also, basically, because the doves would stay pink or stay blue or whatever colour they were dyed until they molted out the following year. They molted out their new feathers the following year. So it would be a bit cruel to have them like that all throughout the year.
But what, like, would a dove die if you dyed a dove?
I'd imagine it was food colouring that was used to dye these doves. There's several photos online of different people, not only in Ireland but around Europe, dyeing their doves, and some of them look spectacular, but also, like, some of them are a bit dawdy looking, to be honest with you, and it's not right in my opinion.
Okay, say with us. Pat Fallon, joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number. Pat Fallon, the well-known magician. Pat, do you use doves in your act?
Yes, indeed, Joe, I do. I've been using doves for over 25 years now.
And would you dye a dove?
I have in the past. I was asked as a product launch for a jean company that were going coloured rather than the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I dyed them and kept them like that for a few years. But then I went back to the natural white, you know, traditional.
And is there any other way you can change the colour of the dove without dyeing the dove?
Well, not really. I mean, the dyeing process is quite simple because it is, as your previous caller said, it's food colouring, and you put it in, and they do have to moult out, so it means you have to do them, you know, almost twice a year to keep them that colour. But it doesn't do them any harm. I mean, it's food colouring. That's why we use it. It's not poisonous or anything like that, you know.
But is there any dove that's indigenously pink? Do you follow me?
Not that I know of. Now, there's a difference between the type of doves that I use and the types of doves that are you know, used at weddings and things, because mine won't actually survive outdoors because they're like, they're white Java doves and they're more like a canary or, you know, and that sort of cage bird breed.
Mm-hmm. And what about if you feed a dove a different food, can you change the colour of the dove?
Not that I know of, Joe. I mean, I've no experience in that. I mean, magicians traditionally would dye their doves using food colouring. But it was a fad in the 60s and 70s, really, and I wouldn't have done it only for the, you know, this product launch was part of the contract. But it sort of went out of fashion. It's like so many other things. But I'm not aware of this gender thing at all because it's sort of different from my business, you know.
Yeah. Anthony, have you heard of doves being fed a different diet to get them to go a different colour?
No, Joe, to be honest. Although I've seen guys with canaries and they'd feed them a different type of food when they're young and when the feathers are grown to accentuate some of the oranges and the yellows that the canary breeders would breed.
Oh, do you? So what do you feed them? Oranges?
It wouldn't be oranges. It'd be certain food additive that, you know, a small bird breeder would be able to tell you more than I would here.
Okay.
Because
apparently they're a rare breed called pink pigeons, but they're now an endangered species in Mauritius, and they're the only, as far as I can find out now, they're the only living relative that has any connection with the dodo.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think there's obviously a dead dodo in the Natural History Museum, the dead zoo in Merrion Square. Would racing club, would I dye my dove, or indeed my pigeon, or any bird, to make it more identifiable, say, in a race?
I personally wouldn't do that, and I know of a lot of pigeon fanciers who do race, and they wouldn't do that either. Basically because that would make the bird a target for birds of prey. That bird would stick out like a sore thumb in a flock of pigeons flying home. That's the reason why a lot of the pigeon fanciers and the pigeon racers wouldn't use white pigeons to race.
Okay.
Because they tend to stick out in a large flock, and they would be targeted on the way home from a race.
By who?
By the birds of prey, sparrowhawks and peregrine falcons.
And there's buzzards in Ireland as well, isn't there?
Buzzards more eat carrion, like roadkill and stuff like that.
Okay. Would they go after a rabbit? A buzzard?
I presume they would.
Yeah, okay. Pat Fallon, why do magicians love doves?
Well, they're sort of traditional, I suppose. You know, the magician with the doves has been around since, you know, the 1900s. But basically, they're a beautiful part of an act. I mean, they're very life, you know, they added an extra bit of life to the act itself. You know, my particular act is there's a lot of silk in it, and then the doves appear and so on like that. It just gives an extra dimension to it. And it's in no way cruel or anything like that. The doves are beautifully kept, and they're very happy in their environment, and they enjoy the work. It's funny, they're like having a cat or a dog. You know, they enjoy their lifestyle.
But like I still love magic, and I've been to so many magic acts. Where are every time I go to a magic act, the dove disappears. Where do they all go?
Oh, well, no, Joe.
Are they an endangered species?
For that.
Okay, I know. Yourself and Angus and McAnally, is it because I don't give away any secrets, especially if there's children, because it's a great skill, a great craft, and it's highly entertaining. But is it that a dove has no backbone or something? You can squeeze it into your hand, or
no, there's nothing like that at all. I mean, look, all magic is misdirection, and it's amazing what we can get away with in the sense of misdirection. And there's no form of cruelty to them. They're in no way suffer any sort of pain or anything like that. They're very happy and comfortable always. And even if they disappear, you know, where they disappear to is always a very safe.
And do you ever get blowback from the animal rights people for using birds in your act?
Well, occasionally, but very occasionally. And they might come backstage afterwards demanding to see something. And the big thing is that when the birds disappear, people sometimes worry where they've gone. And, of course, as soon as you show them that they're still in their cage and happy and alive and well and feeding.
And what would happen to one of your doves if it did disappear from your, wherever you keep them, in your house or your back garden?
Well, they wouldn't survive outdoors.
Oh, would you not?
No. One of them actually flew away.
Do you live in a very rough area, Pat?
No. They just couldn't feed themselves, Joe, and they wouldn't be aware of the danger from cats or birds of prey. But,
and you've had doves for a long time. How do doves die? Do you just wake up in the morning and you find them dead at the bottom of the cage?
No, you would see them.
Auntie Mary's canary.
Well, no, because, you know, you handle them every day and everything, you begin to notice if they start losing weight and things. But, Joe, this is an amazing thing. I mean, doves, I have one dove left here now who's over 25 years old.
Wow.
you know, I've had them since my very beginning.
And how have you managed during the lockdown?
Just exercising every day, keeping them, you know, fit and well, not getting too fat.
Well, you don't take them for a walk. You can't let them out.
No,
they won't come back. They're not homing, sure they're not.
No, I have an indoor space. And,
okay, well done.
You know, but
how have you managed generally during the lockdown, Pat?
With great difficulty, Joe. Yeah. It's been a tough time, you know. And they're just, you know, we're just hoping that we're going to get back to work at some stage in the near future. But I remember.
Well, you could surely, given what the government have said today, you can perform outdoors.
Yeah, and I mean, which is good because a lot of festival work and all is outdoors and things like that. But
200
we can't
people.
Get back into the theatres. That's the biggest problem. That's where we thrive mostly, you know.
And do you get birthday parties? Are you beyond that now? Are you?
Well, I won't say I'm beyond it. I don't really do them anymore. You know, I did. Mm-hmm. I cut my teeth doing children's birthday parties and stuff because it's a great learning experience.
Yeah, I'm bloody right. I see him, mister. I see him. You have him behind you. Anthony Corbett, what is the most unusual request you've got for Doves, for weddings, or anything else for that matter?
For weddings? I don't usually get unusual requests, Joe. I suppose the most unusual one would be, do I dye my birds and could I use them? And for that, I'd say no, absolutely not, for the reasons that I've outlined earlier. Usually we just provide doves for weddings, funerals, different events, communions, all sorts of different occasions.
And would anyone look for doves for funerals?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
But are they white or black doves? There's no such thing as a black dove.
Well, you can get black pigeons. The birds I use, Joe, would be actually small racing pigeons because it would be unethical to use small magician's doves as outlined by a previous caller there as well.
Because they never... When they're let out of the grave or a wedding or a grave or whatever, I presume they fly back to you. So they're homing pigeons of a sort.
Yeah, they do fly home. They do fly home. We started this about 10, 11 years ago and I think we've only lost 4 doves in all of that time.
Wow.
And they travel. They do travel from all over the country. We actually have some going to Sligo in the morning. Funeral.
A funeral?
Yeah, we've 13. We have a family member coming over to collect them in the morning. And they're going to bring them over to Sligo. And the birds should be home to me by 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
But do people look for, when they're ordering doves for a funeral, do they look for, say, the person who died was 65, I want 65 doves?
No. Usually it's more symbolic than that, Joe. They would ask for, say, doves for the amount of children that person might have had, or they might just want the one single dove, or they might want up to maybe 10 doves. But not for, it's not age-related
unless the
person died is pretty young.
Oh, God forbid. Joe Dunn. Joe, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie. Joe Dunn.
Yeah, Joe, how are you?
Good. What are you saying? Have you been to a wedding?
Well, look, you know, this only came to my attention a couple of weeks ago when there was a bit of an outcry on Facebook about the release of these doves because they don't survive in the wild, according to research and the feedback that we were getting, you know?
Yeah, so would you go to a wedding if you went to a wedding and outside the church, the doves were released? Would you go to the reception?
Well, Joe, you go to the wedding and you don't really know what's going to happen, you know, but if the doves are being released at a wedding, you're not going to make a hullabaloo at the wedding, you know, but you would sort of make your opinions known about it, you know.
And if you had a say in it beforehand, you'd say, no, don't. Anthony, they don't survive in the wild. That's according to Facebook, if you believe Facebook, but Anthony...
Well, the doves themselves don't survive in the wild, Joe, but feral pigeons can survive in the wild, although the birds that we use would be small white racing pigeons. They wouldn't be feral at all.
And how many have you lost again in the...
I've lost 4, Joe, in 10 years.
That's a pretty low attrition rate, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, they make their way home. They, you know, they're good racing pigeons. I actually travelled to Belgium 10 years ago to source some of the best racing pigeons in Europe. Yeah. So to ensure that I don't have many losses.
So, Joe, what do you think of that? It's only 4 an attrition rate of, I presume, I don't know what that percentage is, but surely less than in the wild.
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert on it, Joe, you know, but I'm only going on what the outcry on Facebook was about that. The doves don't survive. Pigeons will survive. The pigeons will come back.
Yeah, well, Anthony's explained there, in fairness. They look like doves, but they're actually young pigeons of a particular breed. Okay, Betty Mitchell. Betty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Dove stories. Where dove stories begin?
Greece. A place called Altea. And over the Easter period, as you know, their Easter follows after our Easter.
Yeah, the difference.
In the Orthodox Church. But the Easter Sunday, the most magnificent sight we'd ever seen in our lives.
Yeah.
The doves were every colour in the rainbow.
Wow.
Absolutely gorgeous. They just let them out all over, and they were flying all around the church roof. You know, the big domes.
And
it was magnificent sight.
Oh, they let them out indoors or outdoors?
Oh, outdoors. They were flying all around the dome of the church.
Wow.
Easter Sunday.
And did you happen to ask, Betty, how come the doves in Greece are multicoloured? Ireland they're black and white.
We're just mesmerised and thought how beautiful. We even took photographs. And if I remember rightly, I've got a video of them.
So when you send that, it's probably on a videotape, is it?
It's on a videotape.
Yeah,
I'm having them all. I've got such a lot. Having them transferred. If I do find them, I'll send them on to you.
And wasn't there a famous story where Pope Francis, released some doves?
Yeah,
the dove was hardly out the window. And the predator got them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. Well, no, these were beautiful, and it was a beautiful sunny day, you can imagine. But I'll never forget it. I can still see the dome of the roof, and it was all deep blue, different colours in tiles, you know, the roof. But this magnificent scene of all these beautiful doves, every colour under the sun.
And Joe Dunn, what do you think about that? The Pope released two pigeons, two doves.
No, well, he was ill informed as well. Then, if that's the case, you know.
I know, but the Pope is infallible now.
We won't go into that, Joe.
It was attacked, and the doves were attacked by a passing seagull.
Oh dear God!
But you know what the doves did?
I can imagine.
They dived back into the papal apartment.
Oh!
So they survived. They resurrected. They were resurrected. Okay, and that kind of solves the mystery. But Anthony Corbett, the bottom line is, whoever is dyeing the doves pink in Roscommon, we presume they're nearby where they were photographed by our listener, shouldn't be doing it.
They shouldn't be doing it, Joe. It's pretty unethical now.
Okay.
Joe?
Yes, Betty.
Talking about seagulls, I must tell you a funny story.
Okay, you must, yes.
In the 50s, this was.
Yes, yes.
And my sister and her fiancé then, who she eventually married, but we were crossing over O'Connell Bridge, you know how he went in for the pageantry and all that?
Yeah.
Patrick's Day, crossing O'Connell Bridge, and we were breaking our hearts laughing. And my sister threw her head back with her mouth open. The inevitable happened. A seagull flew over. We've never forgotten that.
I suppose, apparently, if it lands on your shoulder, it's good luck. But if it lands between your lips, I doubt if it's...
Straight into her mouth.
Anthony Corbett, does the Dublin board market, which is the oldest market in Ireland, does it still exist on a Sunday?
That used to be in Thomas Street beside the St. Patrick's Cathedral if I'm not mistaken, Joe.
Yeah.
I think that's gone now. I haven't heard of that in a long time. Although I do know there is one up in Kilnamanna in Talla.
Oh, is there, yeah? A board market on a Sunday morning where people come out with their
canaries. Yeah, I think it's about once a month or once every 2 months, and they come out with the small boards, and it's a buy and sell market for some of the board fanciers in the country.
Yeah, because the board market was, I think it was in Peter Street and then Bride Street, but then the street that was, a very unusual thing happened in Dublin. The street that it was in behind St. Patrick's Cathedral, the street disappeared.
That's right.
The street's gone, but people still call it whatever the old name of the street was. Whereas up around Bride Street, I just wonder, is it still there on the on a Sunday, Mark. As I say, what do you think of it as a hobby, Anthony?
I love it, Joe. I've kept pigeons since I was 12 years of age, and they've kept me out of trouble as a teenager. And I'm actually on the committee of the Dublin Fancy Pigeon Club,
okay,
where we hold several shows a year, and we have fanciers from all around the country and some from abroad coming in and showing their birds, and we compete against each other. And basically, it's just looks, you know, for the birds. It's just they're in large pens, but they're not flown. So it's just looking at the birds. And
are birds good looking?
I mean, they're
beautiful, but can you classify a bird as good looking?
Yeah, there's different standards. It's like a dog show, Joe. There's different standards, and you have to look at structures and
colouring.
There's a breed standard for every breed of pigeon that's out there as well. So if you adhere to the breed standard and you can accentuate it with some unusual colours, well, then you're going to go far in the pigeon world, in the fancy pigeon world.
Okay. And you won't be home for a long time. Kieran Slicker. Kieran.
How are you going, Joe?
Usual name there now. We were talking yesterday about nominative determinism. You know what that is, Kieran? It doesn't apply in your case. It's someone who say, you know, Niall Hatch is the chairman of Board Ireland.
Okay.
You with me? And then I came across recently Garda, he's probably retired now, hopefully in good health, Garda Noel Slow, who was head of the traffic corps in the Garda. He was
all right,
his
yeah.
job was cap. But anyway, Kieran Slicker, unusual name. Tell us your view on the doves and dying the doves, and should
the releasing of the doves at the event. I think the confusion is that there were some people who were releasing what are called fancy pigeons at these events, and they're not fit for flying. They're just kind of there to look good. So I've heard the stories of where people would buy these fancy pigeons just to release at these events, but that's ludicrous. Like your previous caller there said, you have to have racing pigeons.
Oh, they actually, you hang on. You're saying, Kieran, that people go into a pet shop or whatever, buy doves, and just let them off at the wedding and it's good luck?
Yeah, I've heard of this now.
Ah.
I think it's mentioned on Facebook.
Well, that's cruel, isn't it?
Well, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, anyone who, you know, knows anything about birds shouldn't do that. But I just thought that should be clarified, because some people are saying, you know, this is cruel. I think if you're releasing white racing pigeons, it's not cruel.
Of course, because they'll come on.
Fancy pigeons, it is cruel.
But, okay, Anthony, have you heard of that? Someone's just gone in and buys six doves.
Yeah, I've heard of it umpteen times, Joe. Fantails, for example, those birds that I've seen in that photograph, I'd imagine they're probably garden fantails or half bred fantails, which have more tail feathers in their tail than a normal racing pigeon would have. A normal racing pigeon would have 12 tail feathers. These guys would probably have about 14 to 16 tail feathers, which won't enable them to fly very far. So I'd say those birds were just bought off somebody or in a pet shop,
mm-hmm,
and they were just released and they were forgotten about.
And how long would they survive for?
They'd probably hang around on that roof, maybe, Joe, for a couple of days and then go looking for food.
But they'd be killed.
They could be attacked by cats or birds of prey.
In other words,
it's disheartening to see that.
Yeah, it really
is disheartening to see it.
See, that was my whole point in calling, Joe, you know, because this is what I'm against, you know.
I've never heard of that. But surely someone at the wedding says, where did the birds go? Now, surely someone says, what happens to those birds?
Yeah, that's the very, very reason, Joe, why I'd never use a half-breed.
Okay.
You know, because they just land on the nearest porch or tree or whatever, and it wouldn't look good for the wedding party.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, okay. It's bizarre. How have you managed during the pandemic, Anthony Corbett?
I've been doing okay, Joe, to be honest with you. I work in St James's Hospital,
so I haven't
been off that much. So it's work as normal. And lucky enough, I've got vaccinated earlier on in the year, which is great with the team here. So, yeah, it's
okay. Are you medic in St James? What do you do?
I work in the HSSU department, Joe, up beside the theatres. We sterilise the instruments for the operations.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty important job, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a good team here. And what we've done is we broke up the team into three different teams.
Okay.
So if anybody did get caught with COVID, we wouldn't knock out everybody. So at least the operations are continuing.
Well done. Fair play.
Thanks.
And thanks again to you and all your colleagues. By the way, Anthony, somebody said that I've never heard of this, that the board market in Dublin was in Cannon Street.
Cannon Street?
Never heard of it.
I was only young back then, Joe. I wouldn't have known that name. I always knew it as Patrick Street, and there was a pet shop there as well.
Cannon Street in Dublin.
Cannon Street.
Was once Dublin's shortest street. Is that what I'm talking about? And then someone put a gate at the top and bought
it. Right.
And then the street disappeared. That was a board market.
Yeah. And then we used to go into a small door, and the board market was in behind that.
And wasn't there a pub when I was growing up? Not that it was in pub. I used to sit outside pubs with me Club Orange and me packet of potato waiting on the outlet. But wasn't there a pub in Dublin called the Avery?
I don't know, Joe. I've never heard of that. I'm a non-drinker, you see.
Okay. Yeah, Cannon Street in Dublin, it was demolished. It was on the side of Bride Street, close to St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is where people are saying it is. But the street, I can't read the rest of it here, but anyway, but the street disappeared, I presume, when it was demolished. An unusual story, a street disappearing. Okay, we're talking about doves disappearing, and do doves die when doves are died? Anthony Corbett, thanks, Nate. Pat Fallon, wonderful magician. Joe Dunn, Kieran Slicker, good morning.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715.
Today, so far, is for the boards. We're talking about doves, and this listener sent us a photograph of about 12 pink doves sitting on a, not a pear tree, 12 pink doves sitting on a roof in Roscommon, and she wants to know such things as a pink dove, and we're discovering really there isn't, that the doves are died, but the doves don't die when they are died. Paul Hogan now has an explanation of the number of doves that are released at funerals and why. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. And just Anthony there, he's a good friend of mine, and he's explained things excellently. At funerals, the way it normally goes, you'll bring along four doves, and you'd have two separate baskets.
Okay.
You would have three doves in the larger basket,
right,
and one single dove in the small basket.
Okay.
And it symbolises what you, generally the way it works is, as the coffin goes into the ground, the three doves will be released. And what that symbolises is the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. So when doves are released, or pigeons, to get their bearings, they fly up and they circle. And they'll all be circle over the grave, because that's where they've been released from. So when they're circling over the grave, then a family member would release the single dove. And that's a symbol of that soul going up to meet the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
So the single dove represents the deceased?
Yes.
And where does the single dove go?
He'll go up and join the other three that are above there. And they'll all head home then together. Like, they're used to flying in flocks, so the law is gather together
before they
head home.
And then those doves come back to you then, don't they?
Yeah. As Anthony explained, the word dove is used because it's associated with love and
peace,
happiness. But they're actually racing pigeons, highly trained racing pigeons, as Andy explained.
Okay, have you ever lost any? Do you do it?
Munster Love Doves is my own business with it.
Munster Love Doves?
Munster Love Doves, yeah.
Okay.
But very rare you use a bird job. Very, very rare. Because, you know, they're our business, and we love our pigeons. You know, like Anthony, I'm involved in the fancy show pigeons as well. We're very lucky, you know, in Ireland, when it comes to fancy pigeons, that we have a pigeon called the Limerick Short-Faced Tumbler.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a great honour to have a bird called after the city. But we love our pigeons, and anyone in this business, and we're professional, you know what I mean? It's not willy-nilly. Like, those birds that were died on the roof, it wasn't a person, you know, that I don't think loved the birds.
Wasn't an animal lover, okay. Do you know anything about pigeons?
I hope so. I'm involved with them since I'm probably 7 years of age.
You got involved with them what age?
Oh, 7 or 8 years of age.
Oh, 7 or 8, great. Cher.
Hi, Joe.
What happened?
So, Joe, we have a rescued pigeon here on Tuesday afternoon, this poor little birdie. Very handsome bird, I might add. I think they call it blue and white.
Good looking bird,
Not very good looking, not dyed in any way.
Okay.
We found him in our garden, or rather my cat found the pigeon in my garden, but we had just come home, and luckily the cats had been in the house. We had just let them out, and the cat found the bird before we did, but we grabbed it anyway, and all was well. Now, I hasten to add, there was absolutely no damage done to the bird whatsoever.
Okay.
But the bird was very, very tired.
And did you chastise the cat?
You said bold, because you don't do that again. Yes, of course.
What's the cat's name?
Simon.
Simon, okay.
So anyway.
God, Simon's in trouble this week. If your name is Simon, you're in trouble everywhere. Go ahead anyway.
Anyway, that's not the gist of the story. So we took the bird in, and I've been minding the bird, and I immediately recognised it as a homing pigeon because it had its wings and everything. I was able to make contact with their owners.
Mm-hmm. How?
And believe it or not, this bird had flown something like 260 kilometres or more from Craigavon in the north of Ireland.
Well done.
And ended up in County Wexford. And,
but how did you track down the owners, their website?
Because the bird had a phone number on its leg. It was carrying a mobile phone. No, it wasn't carrying a mobile phone. It was ringed and it had its number. And
but could you how
number.
Yeah, but how did you ring the number? How did you read the number?
Oh, because it's
can I come in there? Yeah.
Yeah, Paul, sorry. Yeah,
it's very clear.
Okay. Yeah. Well, how do you read the number on
Well, Joe, every racing pigeon has an identification ring put on them when they're young.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, I know.
It's a ring, right? And that's an Irish homing union. Or if it was GB.
Yeah, but how do I get
it
off?
Well, fanciers like myself, we put our phone on, you buy little stickers, you get them printed, and you put it on over the aluminium ring.
But surely I'd need a magnifying glass to read it.
No, Joe, they're quite you read them with the naked eye. They're quite
And would it not come off if a bird is flying through clouds and rain and...
No, they're stuck on you.
Okay, have we got to the stinger you're called yet, Jerry? Remember you said
no,
to me that's
haven't.
Not...
No, because here's the thing.
Okay, take your time.
So I'll speed up the story. So here's the thing. So we have our bird
do a racing pigeon impersonation for me.
Yeah, Bertie is doing very well, and I've contacted his owners and spoke to them, and all was well. And we had an arrangement made. There was going to be a big pigeon release in Goran Park here in Kilkenny on Saturday.
Right, tomorrow.
And they were sending down drivers, and I was going to drive up and hand over my birdie.
Ah, you're very good.
So, in the meantime then, I get a phone call from another man in County Wexford, about another 40 miles away. And lo and behold, he also has a birdie from the same fancier. So these two guys obviously got lost.
Okay.
The GPS wasn't working. And wherever they were flying to, they ended up in County Wexford. And his birdie, however, is not as cooperative as my birdie, because his birdie won't come down off the roof.
But how did he know his birdie on the roof?
He caught him the first day and then he let him go. And the birdie has been hanging around his roof since Tuesday.
But he caught him and realised he got his number.
He caught him and read the number as well, and was able to make contact with the pigeon fanciers. And they said, oh my God, not another one in County Wexford.
Very careless birds.
So, very careless birdies. So anyway, I've been tic-tacking with the other man, and we were hoping that he would be able to capture his birdie and I would bring the two birdies back to Craigavon.
Okay, have we got to the sing of the call yet?
Thing of the call is, I want to know how can we capture the second birdie because he's not cooperating.
27 minutes later, Jerry reveals her question. Well done.
Can I make a suggestion there?
Yeah, Paul.
Like, if he's on the roof, he's going to come down for feed, and he's obviously getting some sort of feed there to keep him there. So if you've got a shed or something like that, you put a trail of feed into the shed.
This is for the other man who works for
the other man's house, just to take your caller there, I've seen a picture. It's kind of just a very small housing estate. He has been feeding him because I presume his bird was also pretty exhausted when he found it on Tuesday. But the bird seems to be hale and hearty now because he's flying up and down to the roof, but he refuses to be captured.
Yeah, again, set up a pull trap. A basket with a stick and a bit of fishing gut and put the seed underneath it. The bird will go in for the feed. They're quite tame racing pigeons because they're used to being handled in that.
Okay.
So, my fellow was very, very docile.
Yeah. So that's what I suggest, is set up some sort of a pull trap.
What type of food would you be baiting
them
with?
Corn, maize, wheat. Anything at all.
And what's the longest distance any of your pigeon that you would know Paul has flown.
Personally, our longest pitch, our race is out of Scotland, and that was a couple of weeks back. But the races from Barcelona to the UK would be the longest, I suppose, in Europe. They're over 500-600 miles.
Now, someone has suggested that those doves, the pink doves on the roof in Roscommon, are mini flamingos, but they must have been drinking because they're legless if
no,
they're mini.
For doing that, you have to get that colour. You use a food dye, and you dip the birds in the food dye, and it soaks into the skin. It'll wash out. It'll eventually fade away.
You dip the bird in red food dye colouring or whatever.
Yeah,
that's a terrible thing to do to a bird.
But how? But surely that's sticky and icky and.
No, it'll dry off. I mean, it has been done. You know, they do it with chickens. If you go on YouTube, there's loads of people. You know, that do it for different reasons and that. It's unfortunate those birds ended up in that roof, and
But there is a way of. Jer, I thought you were going to. They are coming to Gowran Park tomorrow. The pigeon fanciers.
No, it's been cancelled. Unfortunately,
cancelled over the weather the weekend. So
they do get thrown.
My bird can go back. I'm going to bring him up to Dublin, and they'll come down on the train to Dublin. So I'll bring my bird up to Dublin.
And we should not put out an appeal now. Is anyone going? What part of the country in Kilkenny?
Oh, no, I'm happy to drive to Dublin with my bird. That's not a problem at all. If the second bird is the one, I'd love to get the second bird up to them as well. That would be the important thing. Can I just ask your other caller there, is it likely that this bird will find his way back home?
Yes.
Yeah, once he builds up enough strength. I mean, these birds are highly trained, and these birds cost a lot of money. Pigeons can go anything from, a couple of £100 up to a couple of £1 million lately. But fanciers are always delighted to get their birds home and will travel any distance. And it's one of our rules of any organisation, like there's home and union or whatever club. The onus is on the owner of the pigeon. If your bird gets lost, the onus is on you to go and collect that bird. And if you don't, you won't be racing again. We're fairly strict with that. I mean, the welfare of the birds is uppermost.
Oh, yeah, and they are. I mean, I've spoken to these people. They are very anxious to get the birds back. They are very concerned about the bird. There's no doubt about that. I have no problem with that at all. They sound like very responsible people. These are pigeon races. Like they're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
Okay. Well, it sounds like that's. It sounds like it's going to have.
Respect to wedding dove people, but they're not.
Yeah, but it sounds like that story, Jerry, thanks to you, is going to have a happy ending. So fair play to you.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
Just on the wedding doves, Joe. I mean, mostly if someone is thinking of using pigeons for doves for a wedding or a funeral. Use a reputable professional service, as in anything else. And I mean, there's a few of us there in the country and we work together and, our birds are our livelihood.
Okay. Did you say you work with Anthony? Are you just, he's a buddy.
I've met Anthony at shows. We've judged actually at shows in England, myself and Anthony. And we're in that world. We're in that fancy pigeon world.
And how do you judge a good looking bird?
There's standards for everything, Joe. I mean, there's depending on the breed, there's different shapes, different sizes, feathering. There's a standard for every breed. There's a standard.
Okay, Paul Hogan, good to meet you, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is, I was going to say wash your hands with Dove, which you can't read. And Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I mentioned earlier that the main movie on RTE TV tonight, RTE1, is Veronica Guerin. That incredible movie, Cate Blanchett is in it, made in 2003, which is what? Veronica's dead 25 years there, God rest her, in June. So the movie was made relatively soon after the murder. Now Eddie is contacted. Eddie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I know I won't give out your second name because I think the point you're going to make is very, very controversial. You think Brian Meehan, who's the only person ever convicted of murdering Veronica, he's been in prison for 21 years. You think he should be released soon?
Well, whether soon or not, Joe, but just to say that Veronica Guerin is one of these unique people who put herself out there. You know, she put herself in dangerous way for the better of us all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a great legacy for Veronica Guerin would be we live in a society where people do the most heinous acts.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, they can redeem themselves and they can say, looking back on my life, but what I did was wrong. Because, you know, the word penitentiary, as we use the years in the States, penitentiary, comes from the word, Greek word, kenon.
Okay.
And in years gone by, when you committed a crime or you did an act against society or against your community, you went off into a penitentiary, for penance, into a cell, and you stayed there and you prayed and you redeemed yourself. And and in a society we live in, there has to be the ability to redeem yourself. And there has to be an ability to look back and say, what I did was wrong. You know, and it would be a great tribute to Veronica Guerin looking down on us now to say that if one person can say, what I did was wrong, and I'm truly sorry for it, that would be a great tribute to Veronica Guerin, because she would say, this is what needs to happen. People who are involved in crime, it's not their will to do it. They're not born criminals. But we, as you saw on that documentary a number of weeks ago on Prime Time with the drug situation in Ballymun, where you see kids, it's normalised. Kids coming and going to school. You see that that's normal. And
so, but Eddie, are you saying that if Brian, remember, he pleaded not guilty, the trial went on for months, it was stated, it's subsequently stated in a courtroom by a guard that Brian Meehan drove the motorbike, but the shots were fired by a man called Dutchie Holland, who's now deceased. But that was said openly by the Gardaí in the public forum. That's what they firmly believe. Do you see a difference that Brian Meehan didn't pull the trigger? What an awful phrase.
Not really, no. Yeah. You're culpable. But the thing is that in any given situation, a normal human being can do horrendous things. There are reasons for why people do things, like society, their upbringing, their environment, and all that.
And they make and money.
Yeah, money. If you know
they make a choice for easy money, easy money.
If you know a person called Edith Edgar, you know Edith Edgar, the survivor of Auschwitz.
Okay, yeah.
She said that why do good people do bad things? And she said that in respect, and you have the context in which she said it was. She said it in the context of watching Nazi soldiers throwing live children into foreigners because they couldn't be bothered. They couldn't be bothered to gas them. When she can say, why do good people do bad things? Everybody has the ability to redeem himself.
So are you saying that if Brian Meehan, he's 55 apparently, and he's been moved to Shelton Abbey, which is an open prison outside. Beautiful, beautiful location.
Yeah,
I've been there
yeah.
many, many times, both walking and visiting. Beautiful location. But it's for trusted prisoners who, because the prison officers are in their own clothing, so to speak, they're casual. There's not a big prison regime about it. The gate is open. Obviously, they don't want you leaving. And if you do leave, you're in the middle of nowhere anyway, unless you have it arranged, you'll be caught fairly quickly. But are you saying if Brian Meehan says to his probation officer or whatever, apparently he's now a probation officer pre-release, if he says to his probation officer, I'm so sorry for being involved in the murder of that young woman, who never saw 55, never saw 35. I'm now 55 and I just want to send a message that I'm so sorry and I'm reformed and I'm 55, which is a good age. Let's hope he's not thinking of getting involved again. I'm sure he won't. But I'm not sure he won't. I don't know. I don't know the man. I don't know anything about him. But you're saying if Brian Meehan says, I am sorry, he should after 21, 22 years be released.
Well, what I'm saying to you, only he knows what he's thinking and only he knows what he means when he says,
but
I'm
you'll
sorry.
You'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say...
I would say... If Veronica Guerin is looking down on us now, she will know, and it would be a great legacy to her if this person who perpetrated this heinous crime would repent and say, "I'm truly sorry for what I've done."
His reward should be release.
Well, his reward for Veronica Guerin is at least she didn't die for nothing.
His reward is that he should be released.
Well, if he's truly sorry, and if he understands that there are reasons why he did it, raised in an environment as those kids that you see on the Prime Time special,
say there, Eddie. Obviously, the closest living relative to Veronica is her wonderful son, and indeed her husband. But Jimmy Geeran has kept, as well, along with Veronica's family, kept the flame burning on this issue. Jimmy, first of all, did you know that Brian Meehan has been moved to Shelton Abbey?
Yeah, I was aware, Joe, that he was being moved to an open prison. I was made aware of that a number of months
And you know
back.
Shelton Abbey is pre-release?
Well, it's pre-release in most instances, but that pre-release would have to be sanctioned and approved by the current Minister for Justice.
So
which I don't believe. Yeah. When I did hear, I made inquiries. In fact, I wrote to the Taoiseach on the matter, who contacted me and then wrote to me. And he, whilst he can't go into individual cases, he's quite satisfied that it has not been agreed or approved that Brian Meehan is being prepared for early release.
And what you say, he wrote back, did he phone you as well?
I spoke with him as well. Well, me, I would have been very close with Veronica.
Gone way back, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, and I would know myself way back. So I'm not concerned.
So the Taoiseach rang you out in the last few weeks after you said you were worried about him going to Shelton. Did he confirm that he was in Shelton?
He didn't show. He did confirm that he was aware of my concerns, say, regarding me, but he couldn't comment specifically on the case. However, he did make contact with the Minister for Justice, and he did make inquiries for me, which would be normal if somebody made a representation. And he was satisfied that it's not the case that Meehan has been approved for early release.
And it's not on the cards?
Not as we speak. And I mean, I don't expect or anticipate. I mean, it was a horrendous crime. And, you know, I listened to your previous speaker.
Well, what do you think of what Eddie said that I'm paraphrasing, bear with me, that in Veronica's memory, in Veronica's legacy almost, after 21 years, he should be given the...
You know what, Joe, I mean, and I don't mean to be offensive, and I know Eddie means well and is very much entitled to his view, but I would find that type of thing of linking anything that would happen with me and as part of Veronica's legacy, I just couldn't buy that and stomach it. And anyway, I mean, we talk about redeeming. To this day, Meehan hasn't admitted that he murdered Veronica. So to be sorry for something, you have to acknowledge that you did it first, and that hasn't yet happened.
And does he ever admit that he drove the bike?
No, he denied. And the other thing about people, you know, when they're released from prison and you hope that some people will mend their ways, the reality is with that particular gang, the late Dutchie Holland was released from prison, he went back into crime. When John Gilligan was released from prison, he went back into crime and still facing charges in Spain. And I don't believe that it's fair to talk about people's areas or upbringing or families is what drove them. The whole motivation behind Veronica's killing was greed and money, nothing else.
And he
there's something there, Joe.
Eddie, yes.
Well, yeah, I it's very difficult for me to understand and to feel the pain this man has felt when his wife was killed. But we know statistically and from scientific evidence that where you're reared, the environment you're reared in, the conditions you're reared in, does fundamentally affect the person you are. You know, how you grow up, the environment you're reared. Like, you have people in the church
The line is terrible. I'll call a break. But just someone said, like, Veronica wasn't reared with a silver spoon in her mouth. Jimmy Geeran wasn't reared, but far from it.
But she was
an incredible worker from an early age. Eddie, stay with us. No, Eddie, I just want to try and get a better line, because this is a really important discussion which hasn't in this context been held before. Eddie is making the point, on the back of the movie that's on tonight, I think that's what put in people's heads, Veronica's movie on RT, that after 21 years, Brian Meehan, who drove the bike, it was Dutchie Holland who pulled the trigger. But Brian Meehan is the only man ever convicted of the murder of Veronica, which is bizarre in itself. And Eddie is saying a legacy in honour of Veronica, her brother finds that suggestion bordering on the despicable, from what I gather Jimmy is saying, that Brian Meehan should be released. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715.
Eddie contacted us. It's the 25th anniversary, but the movie is on tonight. Saying after 21 years, Brian Meehan, who's the only person ever convicted of murder of Veronica Guerin, the wonderful person, mother, sister, daughter, and journalist, was her trade. After 21 years, should Brian Meehan be released? And Eddie is raising that question, and he basically argues that inter alia, if at 55 Meehan should be rehabilitated, and if he indicates that, well, then he should be released. Apparently he's been moved to the open prison of Shelton Abbey. Eddie, what did you want to say to Jimmy there, please?
Well, this is what I believe, Joe. Veronica Guerin, the courage she showed and the pursuit she had of these criminals and to try to understand them and to bring them into the public domain and to kind of humanise them in that sense. Mm-hmm. But when you die, Joe, I believe you go to a state of grace and all that's unknown becomes known and all that is dark becomes light. And therefore, your humanness is left behind. Mm-hmm. And you see things very, very clearly. And you have so much compassion and so much forgiveness and so much understanding of the human condition. You can look down on people and say, you know what? Any human being is capable of anything, the most grotesque thing, but they are also capable of redeeming themselves. If we don't believe that and we don't accept that, then what is life about? It's futile. If we don't believe that those who commit the most heinous crimes have not the ability to redeem themselves and have not the ability to say, oh, that was then and this is now. I cannot compare the person I am now as the person I am when I was a child. And yet my childhood affected me. I have been in charity for 3 years, Joe, from trauma as a child. My mother lost three children when she was between the ages of 28 and 38. And that affected me deeply. And I didn't understand that. And so I was a child most of my life. And I understand now that there are reasons for everything. And there are those people out there who are struggling and trying to find reason for life and wondering why. Is this the way I am? Is this the way I'll always be? And nothing will change. No. There are reasons why things happen. And there are reasons to say to yourself, I can be a better person. When I was 10 and 12 years old, I was robbing shop, you know, when I was 10 and 12 years old. And therefore, for the grace of God, lots of fellas I went to school with ended up in criminality. And why I took the different fork and ended up just on the road to not criminality is just in the lap of the God. So I would say that this guy who committed this crime, and he's culpable as the guy who pulled the trigger, no doubt about that. You know, he was there. But after 21 years, if he hasn't changed and if he hasn't redeemed himself, or he hasn't really said to himself, I'm deeply and truly sorry for what I did.
According to Paul Healy, which is the latest thing I read in the Mirror, apparently he in his 21 years he didn't get into any trouble with prison officers, which is, I think, must be difficult in itself. He didn't get into any trouble. He was never reported. He was never brought back to court to say for starting trouble in the prison. Recently, apparently, he was on the wing in the landing, as they call it, in Weefield, which is for people who've been in for life but are on the road to being released. So they're allowed a lot more independence. You can go in and cook your own food and things like that. But the reports reports about him are not bad, in that to say he was of good. Good behaviour. And Jimmy, do you make, again, a difficult question, Jimmy, but you've...
Could I just say something before you pose the question, Joe? I don't think we had to lose Veronica, and Veronica had to go on to the next world, because we know she was compassionate, we know she forgave people, we know she cared, and we know she was very much concerned about people's social circumstances and everything else. So she was that good person before she was taken from us. And I think we should remember that, and that's very important. And I don't believe that, Eugene, that there's any bad intent or in what he's saying. But I do think that some of it is wrong in the circumstances relating to me, and or indeed anybody who's responsible for a despicable killing. And I don't believe that it is appropriate to say, well, they've served their time and maybe now they see the light. Mm. If they haven't acknowledged the action that they've done and expressed an apology for that and remorse for that.
And do you know Shelton Abbey, Jimmy? Have you ever been?
I have been, well, when I was writing, Joe, many years ago, I have been down. Okay. But I am familiar with it. And yes, I mean, I know the situation and the circumstances, and I have visited people in open or similar prisons, and I know the type of environment that they live in.
It's probably, in terms of conditions and relaxation, and it's a well-run prison, but it's probably the nicest prison in Ireland, by a long shot.
I would accept that, yeah.
And what do you think the fact that your sister's killer is there now?
You see, Joe, what I think is important is that he's denied his freedom.
And that
he doesn't be released, and I've made that view known. I don't think it's for me, even though I would have my views, I would far rather he were still in a more difficult environment in Portlaoise or somewhere else. But it's not for me to decide that. And I was happy enough to participate and to be involved as you know, somebody who went to the trials and everything else. I was happy enough to leave all those decisions and to leave that with the authorities, and I still would be. And I mean, there is an avenue
if you heard that he was being released imminently, how would you react?
I would be deeply upset by that.
And would you campaign to keep the...
I mean, you know, campaigning, Joe, is would be making my views known to those who I believe are responsible for it. But if you're asking me, would I be going out and vociferous and complaining about it? Well, I don't think that there's anything to be gained from that. I would like that they look, if we take Malcolm MacArthur, who served 30 years for a heinous crime. So, at the end of the day, a Minister for Justice of a day is going to have to sign a release and say that me and is fit to be released back into society. If that happens, would I be annoyed and upset? Mm. I would be deeply annoyed and upset. I would rather see that he never got out. But, of course, that's going to be my view. It's my sister that he murdered.
Mm. You think he should never get out?
Oh, I believe he should serve at least the sentence that was served by Malcolm MacArthur, which would be another 9 years.
Okay, 30 years. Now, Malcolm MacArthur, well, he was only found guilty of one killing, and the state entered a nolle prosequi on the other one, but everyone not knew the circumstances. But, Jimmy, we 2 weeks ago we did this... this awful story, and it's awful for the families involved as well. I hasten to add, I begin with that. But these three young men that were born to death when their car was going down the wrong way, a motorway, and it collided with a truck. And like one of them, I think his name was Carl Freeman now, I'm just going to remember. One of them, Carl Freeman, had been sent to something like 7 years in prison for a savage attack on an old woman who subsequently died, by the way. Now, her family believe it was linked, but she died. The woman was already seriously unwell. And she was so unwell that she had two bags on her body for medical reasons. And that woman was pulled out of her bed by this man and, give me the money, and where's this and where's that? It was a robbery. She gave an incredible victim impact statement. Yet Carl Freeman, if he had served his sentence of 7 years, he'd still be alive because he'd still be in prison. But he was released after 3 years. So, to get to my point, other people who've done heinous things have been released, and other people who've done heinous things have been released without having to declare that mea culpa, that I was wrong. Now, usually the criteria, well, it wasn't my day, was good behaviour. You do the sentence and then it's mitigated by, one, the tariff and the caveats that are around the tariff, good behaviour, and then it's good behaviour.
Just 2 points, Joe. I have always believed that, you know, people, the amount of crime that is carried out by people who are out on bail or people who have been given early release is a huge percentage of the overall crimes committed. I'm not asking for Meehan to come out and admit what he did and apologise.
Okay.
I'm just trying to make the point that Eugene was making, if somebody is redeemed and if they're sorry for what they've done, but that doesn't apply in Meehan's case. But I do think that.
But even if he did, Jimmy, you still think he should serve at least 30 years?
Would make no difference. Joe, if I could find somebody who served 40 years for a murder here, I would be using that for a comparison.
Well, you can.
That he would serve that crime.
There's been a man who murdered a guard, and their sentence is usually 40 years.
We do know that a guard or a member of defence forces who's killed like that, it is a different type of offence. So okay. I didn't want to draw
that. Okay, I'll take that point. Well made. Eddie, your point.
Can I just say something, Joe? To tell you something that I witnessed and I saw many years ago, and it puts into context the reality of what, when kids are growing up, how their environment affects them and what life they will lead. I worked in a factory in a part of Dublin. I won't say what part, but it was broke into one night, and it was a sportswear, you know, clothes. Yeah, we were trying to find out how they got into the factory, you know. Mm. Anyway, the police came and forensics came, and after about 2 hours, the frantic guy, I was walking in the factory, he said, "Come on, I want to show you something. Come over here." And what happened was, it was very subtle, but this was an old Georgian building, and like it had small panes of window, like on a Georgian building. The pane of glass was about 6 inches by 9 inches wide, and it was broken. And we were wondering how they got into this part of the window. And the guy says, "Have a look at this." I'm at the dust of the thing. There was a child's footprint on the window, on the sill, and in the factory. This child would have been about 18 months old, maybe.
Okay.
So they put the child into the window
to go and
get the stuff and bring it out.
I know what you mean. From a young age.
This is normal.
Paul Callie. Okay, stay there for a sec. Paul Callie has contacted us, sister of Rachel O'Reilly, as you know, murdered by her husband, Joe O'Reilly. And that was, what, 2004 at this stage. Paul Callie, good afternoon. You're listening to this discussion.
Yeah, I'm Joe. Yeah, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you, more importantly, and your mum and dad?
Everyone's good, thanks. I was just listening to Jimmy there, and I totally agree with him. Like, they've no remorse. They never admit it. They should never get out. It's just that simple. We've all suffered now for 16, 17 years, and we keep suffering till the day we die. So I do believe an eye for an eye. And I know that the death sentence and all isn't in this country, and it never will be, and that's fair enough, but they definitely should be serving a lot more than 20 years in prison.
So how long do you think Joe O'Reilly should serve for killing your sister?
Joe, if I had me choice, he'd never get out, but I do understand at some stage, like, the way it works. But
now, you got a life sentence. You think it should mean life. That was 2007. But he never, he pleaded not guilty. He's never admitted it.
He's never admitted it, and he never will admit it, I don't think. And 20 years isn't life, Joe. Mm. 20 years is 20 years. Like, we're nearly done to 20 years now, and nothing's changed for us. You know, this model prisoner, that sort of annoys me a bit. Like, what else are they supposed to do in prison? Like, they just sit there all day to get educated, to get fed. I mean,
The last incident with Joe O'Reilly, apparently in prison, was that he was caught with a USB stick with 200 movies, videos, songs, all that.
Yeah. But hopefully that adds to his sentence, but I mean, I God love that man who rang in there. And
you hear where he's coming from, but
yeah, I do. But it's only when you're in that situation, Joe. It's like, I'm not calling him a do-gooder, but like, when you're in that situation, it's a daily battle every single day. I have two parents who are in their 80s now,
and how are Jim and Rose?
They're grand, like, physically and all, but mentally, I mean, the lights went out a long time ago, you know? Like, you just wake up every day with the same. Like,
it is
a life sentence. Yeah. No, you never will recover.
Okay, say what is Paul Callie. PJ McAvoy is a former prison officer. PJ, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You say in your contact here, I met him. You met who?
Oh, no, it's not that I met anybody. I'm just talking in relation to prisoners in general.
But you say you met him. Have you met Brian Meehan in the course?
I know of him.
And
the same as I would have known most of the prisoners.
And what's he like?
Well, Joe, Brian Meehan is like most prisoners. He committed a crime. He was convicted by the courts. He was sent to prison. He got a prison sentence. And the prison service then is responsible for his retention and rehabilitation, if and where humanly possible. And that's the situation. Every prisoner is entitled at some stage to release if it's humanly possible and if they reach the bar where that is possible. It's not med.
Well, PJ, not only were you a prison officer, you were former president, general secretary of the Prison Officers Association.
Yes.
In terms of meeting people, do you think, and this the call today was about Brian Meehan and Eddie believing that 21 years, we should think, the state should think about rehabilitation. And like, did it cause trouble in the prisons?
Not really. Mm. But I think we'd lose sight of what we're really talking about.
Well, what we're talking about is Veronica.
Joe, that crime was horrific. You know it, I know it, every human being in this country and abroad knows that.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, there was a person committed to prison for a long prison, a long term. Like Malcolm MacArthur. But what does the prison service do? The prison service also has a responsibility. They don't just take in human beings and lock them up. And at the end of the day, you release them if humanly possible.
Well, PJ, does the fact that this man is 55 years old now, will that make a difference? Like, it's a good age.
Yes, but the point is, it's the administration, it's our politicians. They're the people who make the decision. The prison service doesn't.
I know that.
The rules,
but you are asked formally for your opinion.
Yes, and my opinion would be that every human being is entitled. Every human being that's admitted on a very, very serious sentence, or otherwise, are all entitled to apply for remission. Everybody.
And you think Meehan should not be discriminated against in that sense?
Well, I think if he fits the bar, if he fits what's required in relation to, I mean, he's not just released. There's a committee.
There's supervision. I know that.
You understand that, Joe. But if people have made recommendations that he's released, that's what happens. And at the end of the day, we all have to try to be better human beings, whether we're in the prison, commit horrific crimes, or whatever.
Well, from your observation or knowledge of Meehan, he's not an outlier, is he, in that sense, that you think the path for him should be the same path that others take in their prison journey?
Well,
that includes release for good behaviour.
I believe, and it's easy for people who are removed from the crimes that's committed against their family, but as a person who was involved in the penal system for many years, I do believe that if people are recommended for release and they fit the criteria to release them.
Okay, I take that point. So you can't judge if Meehan is capable of reform?
Well, all I would say is, if that is the opinion of the Minister for Justice.
Okay, let me put it another way. From what you know of Meehan, is he incapable of reform?
Oh, no, I don't believe. I'd have to say I do believe he would be capable of reform.
Okay. Jimmy, just before you go, Jimmy, the last, I don't know whether it's still got knocking around this video of John Gilligan in Spain and they're all drinking or something at some bar or whatever, some swimming pool. But they make reference. It was actually released.
It's offensive, Joe. They made reference and start shouting, he didn't do it.
And this was around the anniversary.
That takes you back to the few months before Veronica's killing, when you had Gilligan and another gang of thugs shouting about Veronica and crime does pay, when they were over in the Mauritius Islands or something. You might remember
horrific, despicable. Okay, now your position is clear, and I thank you. That's Councillor Jimmy Gearn, brother of Veronica Eddie. Thanks indeed, Paul Callaghan. Again, condolences to both of you, but also Paul, especially to your dear mother and father, who, as you say, not a day goes by, not a minute goes by. What about a day? A minute goes by, but they don't think of their gorgeous daughter, Rachel. Rest in peace, PJ McAvoy. Thanks indeed.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Jamie Dylan, Sir Richard Burns, the BCO, and the producer, today is Sian O'Gorman, obviously, and back on Monday at 1:45. Catherine Thomas is next, but remember, go, Kelly, go. Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.